tracking such figures 2 years ago, an ominous sign that despite 3 years of combat, the U.S.-led coalition forces haven't significantly weakened the Iraq insurgency. Stating for the record what most of us already know, former Vice President Al Gore said that the current Bush administration was, quote, a renegade band of right-wing extremists, end quote. In an interview with London's The Guardian newspaper today, the former vice president calls himself a recovering politician, but also launches into the political fray more explicitly than he has previously done during his high-profile campaigning on the threat of global warming, denying that his politics have shifted to the left since he lost the court battle for the 2000 election. Mr. Gore says, quote, if you have a renegade band of right-wing extremists who get hold of power, the whole thing goes to the right, end quote. Taking their apology back, the Dixie Chicks aren't seeing any reduction in sales from their anti-Bush stance, as their album, Taking the Long Way, debuts at number one on the Billboard Top 200 Best-Selling Albums chart this week, with first-week sales of 525,829. The Dixie Chicks have become the first female group in chart history to have three albums debut at number one, breaking the record the Chicks established in 2002 when the group's last studio album, Home, debuted at number one and made them the first female group ever to have two albums debut at number one. The Federal Communications Commission is poised to propose new media ownership rules that will allow media companies to own newspapers, television, and radio stations in the same city, according to media watchdog groups. The proposed rule would dissolve a long-standing policy that prohibited corporations from owning a television station and a daily newspaper in the same market. The cross-ownership rule, promulgated in 1975, was enacted to ensure media diversity. Individuals close to the commission say the FCC will propose relaxing media ownership rules possibly as soon as June 15th, when the commission next meets, the media watchdog Free Press has stated. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush takes action to help deploy 44,000 peacekeeping troops to stop the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan. Join them today. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
A CBS News correspondent critically wounded by a car bomb in Iraq that killed two colleagues was heavily sedated and breathing through a ventilator Wednesday at a U.S. military hospital in Germany. Still, Kimberly Dozier reacted to the arrival of her family and boyfriend, according to CBS and Landstuhl Regional Medical Center spokesman Marie Shaw. Shaw said, quote, when her boyfriend visited, she was aware of his presence, end quote. Dozier, an American, was flown to the hospital in southern Germany on Tuesday after sustaining critical injuries on Memorial Day when a car bomb exploded, killing two colleagues and a U.S. soldier and an Iraqi translator. The United States is willing to join European nations in direct talks with Iran if the Iranian government first agrees to suspend its programs to enrich uranium and reprocess spent nuclear fuel, activities that Washington charges are part of plans to build nuclear weapons. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, announcing the U.S. policy shift at a State Department news conference today, warned that if the Iranian government does not choose the path of negotiations and continues to pursue atomic weapons, quote, it will incur only great costs, end quote. But she stopped short of confirming that the United States has obtained agreement from Russia and China to impose United Nations sanctions if Iran does not comply. She said in response to questions after a prepared statement that negotiators are still, quote, working on a package, end quote, that includes potential penalties for noncompliance as well as benefits if Iran accepts the deal. The African Union scrambled to persuade holdout Darfur rebels to sign up to a peace deal for the violence-racked Western Sudanese region hours before a deadline expires. With only one faction of the main rebel group having signed and another giving a flat no to the overture, the AU and its partners were pushing last-minute efforts to bring at least dissident factions on board. The groups have refused to sign the accord aimed at ending 3 years of conflict in Darfur, which has left some 300,000 people dead and 2.4 million homeless. They argue that the deal fails to fully address their concerns. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. So it's almost 6 minutes after the hour. This is your daily confrontation with the facts and just the facts. I am, in fact, Bob Kincaid. And it's, at least in this portion of the globe, Wednesday. And you know what that means, Wednesday. We do it pretty much every week, while the right-wing religion industry is off plotting our destruction, we can at least have a little fun at their expense. That's why we call every Wednesday show our prayer meeting edition of Head On with me, Bob Kincaid. And I hope you're all gussied up for prayer meeting. Got some all the stories that come out. Oh.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Thank you, Lisa. it's prayer meeting edition. Anything can happen, and usually does. But before we jump into the insanity of the right-wing religion industry, and God knows there's enough of it, I tell you from time to time about the bizarre little press releases that I get from the right wing. I wonder if they know how much fun I'm having with it. This one, subject, thousands to join hands forming human fence on Mexican border. Interview opportunity. You remember Hands Across America? What was that for? Hunger or some disease? AIDS? It was a long time ago. I put it on a brain cell that I may have subsequently killed. I'm not sure. But you remember Hands Across? It was a noble liberal undertaking, built of good spirit and conceived in concern for our fellow human beings. Thousands to join hands forming human fence on Mexican border. June 3rd, this Saturday, virtually any illegal alien daring to attempt to dash across the border is likely to end up in the arms of any of 1,000 U.S. citizens, arms of any one of thousands of U.S. citizens who are not likely to let them come across. Hands Along the Border, sponsored by Standing on Secure Borders, SOS Borders, a coalition of dozens, I tell you, dozens of anti-immigrant groups. They're getting together somewhere in Arizona to be the weird little freakish racists that they are. You remember your childhood, right? I remember mine very well. The playgrounds, third grade, fourth grade. These idiots, the minute men. Remember their wives named them that. The minute men. are going to stand on the U.S.-Mexican border, remembering their childhoods and the playground days of third grade. And they're all going to stand there in English and say, Red Rover, Pablo must not come over. Jeez. and this is another publicity stunt from that freak Chris Simcox. He justified the human fence saying, quote, President Bush once said he would not wait on events to act to protect our country. He's been president for over 5 years, and still he has not acted to secure our territorial frontier, even as his administration admits the United States government does not have operational control of our borders. So they're going to go and play Red Rover on the U.S. border. All these minute men and their freakish friends. This is prayer meeting edition. So I think it's entirely fitting to ask a particular question. All these minute men dedicating their lives to hate, dedicating their the passing minutes and seconds and hours and days, months, weeks, whatever, of their incredibly finite little lives to standing in the desert and hating poor people. Some of them are in right-wing religion industry churches this very evening, praying to a Jesus that they think is blue-eyed and blonde-haired and about 6'2", and thinking that they are doing his work by hating the poor. Can you get sort of into that mindset? I've tried. That walk a mile in their moccasins thingy. I've tried that. And I can't get where they are. These nasty people. You can go through the Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, you know, the important books, if you're a Christian. And you can find Jesus, Yeshua, his real name. You can find him talking a lot about not mistreating the poor, not crapping on the poor, not mistreating workers. There's a lot of stuff about that. There's next to nothing about sex. And pardon me for just a moment, but I seem to recall a parable about the Good Samaritan. You know, the Samaritans in that culture were the hated, the loathsome, literally untouchable. But it was the Samaritan who finally came along and rescued the beaten, half-dead traveler by the side of the road. It was the Samaritan. That Samaritan equates with the people that the minute men and Chris Simcox hate. And yet Yeshua spoke fondly of him. They will fan out to the east and west in a human wall, forming what is expected to be the longest single human blockade in history. Because they want to secure the borders. So thus we begin tonight's prayer meeting edition with right-wing freaks who probably consider themselves Christian, who are doing everything in their power to run completely against the grain of everything that Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter ever stood for. And that's just the first one in the stack. Oh, yeah, there's that, yeah. George Bush learned about the Haditha massacre from the press. Wait a minute, I thought he didn't read. Never mind. Let's see. Oh, yeah, there's some nasty stuff going on in Indiana. Not enough religion in Virginia, oddly enough. The evangelo-fascists are going to take down the Chi-Coms. Got that. You see, we are brimming over with stuff for tonight. and I can prove it. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do what I did last night. I'm not going to freak out about Haditha. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I promise. So let's take a break. When we come back, some of the stories I mentioned, your conversation, this is, after all, conversation radio. What you bring to the table is every bit as important. Get on board at 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Yes. Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now, he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway...
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with... creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. This is Head On for a Wednesday afternoon, late afternoon, early evening. It's our prayer meeting edition, and let's get right to it. Let's start with the one that got under my skin the most, worst, baddest, best, whatever. You know, and you share my stance on a lot of things, and I for one am very, very jealous of the individual rights contained in the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution, and primarily among those, the First Amendment. I've talked in the past. I talked last night. I don't think the whole Bill of Rights is worth much if you don't have the First Amendment. You know what I mean? I mean, keeping bare arms against a government that might abridge your what rights? What right is worth having if you don't have the right to freely express yourself? Right? I mean, seriously. Name me a right. The right against self-incrimination? Well, isn't non-speech speech as well? You see, I'm struggling a little bit, I admit. Trial by jury? Why? If you live in a government that can punish you for speaking your mind, you don't need a jury system. Because they're going to get you one way or the other. And I say this, as preface to the fact that we acknowledge that speech comes in many forms, and that consenting adults, at least from my viewpoint, you hear the right wing on the nanny state. Yeah, you know, you've got to have Social Security. Social Security's nasty. You're an ugly little dependent of the nanny state. Nah. Especially those freakish, hateful, the proto faux fake dummied up libertarians like Neil Bortz, who always refers to the public schools as government schools. Hates public education, hates the social safety net, hates everything that doesn't let you know, right-wing Republican cronies just run roughshod over America. And within freedom of expression, there is the right to read and view that which you please, that, you know, as long as you're not foisting it off on someone who is not capable of consenting. And I even extend that to Republicans procreating, as disgusting as that concept is to me. Everybody consenting? Yeah, Republicans can procreate. Who am I? So, what have I got? Concerned Christians in Jackson County, Indiana, are hoping to shut down a local porn shop by posting customers' photographs online. Now, at the risk of getting myself in trouble, no, I'm not going to do it. At any rate, there's a you know, dirty bookstore in Uniontown, Indiana, just off I-65, opened about 8 months ago. And the useless little religion industry freaks have been marching up and down in front of it ever since. And probably trying to sneak a peek every time the door gets open. Don't look in there, Eunice! Don't look! Around the clock, they're taking pictures of customers and putting the pictures on the internet. The group calls itself, remember a couple of nights ago we talked about, what's his name, Rick What's-His-Face, who wrote The Purpose-Driven Life, who it now turns out is tied in with a video game that is going to teach little right-wing religion industry children to shoot the Jews and shoot the Catholics and shoot the Buddhists and shoot, you know, everybody that doesn't agree with them. You know, a shoot-em-up game. It's called a first-person shooter. You know from video games. Well, these, and you know, it's because they're at war. They're warriors for Jesus. Well, there's a group called War Line. They can't think, these weirdos can't think about Jesus without thinking about bloodshed and death and torment and torture. the War Line. And it runs a website. And that website posts pictures of people who, within their constitutional rights, walk into a bookstore that happens to sell adult paraphernalia for use by consenting adults. I said I wasn't going to, I'm not, no, I'm not, I tell you what, I'm not going to lose it. We'll come back to the story. I'd like your thoughts on it. What do you do to somebody who does something like that? How do you respond to that? Because, see, I can't get down with the whole turn the other cheek thing on this. Because, frankly, if you or anyone else wants to go in and buy a copy of, you know, whatever, everything in there is legal. It ain't none of my business, and it's not some polyester-wearing the freak from some religion industry fundamentalist outfit's business either. Let's go to the phones. Robert is joining us from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself, sir?
Very good, very good. Just wanted to chit-chat briefly about kind of religion in part and how it's really seen in the national culture. If you come over to Asia, what is the only Christian country in Asia? Do you know that?
The only Christian? The Philippines.
That's right. And if you ever go to the Philippines, you will see that it is a living hellhole. It's not very clean. It's corruption everywhere. And my wife, who's Filipino, actually calls it Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, it's wasn't Ferdinand Marcos a Christian?
Oh, yes, of course, and his wife. Yeah, they were all great, 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 great Christians. They all murdered people left and right. But then you step over to Japan, which is an agnostic and atheistic country, if there ever was one, and in comparison, it's like going from heaven to hell, or hell to heaven, I should say. So that's the irony. And my point is that if you want to see the effect of true spirituality, you can look at the country and see how clean it is and how honest it is, and that's where the true spirituality comes through. Because in Japan, I mean, the people are so honest it actually boggles my mind. They work hard like crazy. They have bad, bad jobs. I mean, their jobs are worse than I've ever seen, but the people are impeccably honest.
Well, if you're in a situation where you understand that there's no pie in the sky when you die and you've got to do it here, you either live honorably or your life is meaningless and futile, because honor here and dignity here is all there is. I can understand how it would be that way.
Right, right. And it's very ironic, because you would think, you know, the Christian country would be the paradise on earth, right? You know, here it is, the Philippines should be paradise on earth. But you know, it's the waiters, the taxi cab drivers, the security agents that at the airport, they're trying to shake you down every step of the way. And it's just really amazing to see that.
Aren't the Philippines a hub for some of the most egregious forms of the sex trade in the world, Robert?
Oh, of course. I mean, Japan finally cut off its boatloads of entertainers, you know, because it was just getting out of hand, because it was really becoming a sex slave trade for the businessmen here. And, you know, it was the father selling the daughters, basically, sending them off, get some money, and send it back to us. So,
because in that Christian country, there's nothing in the way of a safety net to help take care of the family back home, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's the worst of the, you know, if you want to see brutal capitalism, go to the Philippines, because that's there it is. I mean, it's $200 a month, $300 a month, 12 hours a day, and it's brutal. Brutal.
Well, I think about the Northern Marianas Islands. I read something from that Ralph Reed had written not too long back, talking about how they were bringing Christianity to the Northern Marianas and to oppose Bill Clinton's minimum wage proposal there. Right. And it turns out what they were bringing was prostitution and sexual slavery.
Right. I think Frisk was trying to block a bill to reform the sweatshops there. He said it's not going to pass as long as he's on deck, basically. But
right, and Tom DeLay was actively involved in that as well.
Right.
You know, again, another good Christian.
Exactly, right. But, I mean, even in America, you can look at, you know, parts of the United States where you have the, you know, the Bible Belt, and you can look at the culture and the sites, and you can say, hey, it's not very developed here. It's not very clean. It's not very honest. And if you want to see, you know, true faith and true Christianity, and look at the surroundings, you know, and talk with the people and see how they actually are, because you'd be amazed. There's a big disconnect.
Oh, I'm not really. I'm here in Alabama, Robert.
Yeah.
And I don't have to drive very far to start seeing just abject poverty in the midst of this vastly Christian culture here.
Yeah, I mean, look at Afghanistan under the Taliban. It was a living hellhole, and these were the most religious people. So, but I mean, it's amazing because the United States has really become a second world country in my eyes. Compared to the United States. You were talking yesterday about the trains.
Yes.
And I mean, here we have the bullet trains, you know, and I've ridden on them for 12 years, and you can go from, say, here from Kitakyushu to Hiroshima, which is a 4-hour, car ride, and go there in 1 hour. You can go from here to Fukuoka, which is an hour and a half trip, and you can do that in 15 minutes. And we've had that for 30 years, and there's not one bullet train in the United States that I know of. Even
no.
China has the, you know, a maglev system now in Shanghai, which is the next generation of the bullet trains, you know. And we've got I think we've got two of these in Japan, too. But, I mean, I went back to California briefly, and I rode the trains, and I was like, oh, my God, what is this?
You felt like you were pulling into Dodge City, didn't you?
Oh, it was horrible, yeah. And the buses were even worse. And the water wouldn't work. The bathrooms were broken. And on the planes over the Pacific, I hate that, because the last time I took United, and there was no water in the bathroom.
Well, that's because government regulation is bad for business, right?
Yeah, they regulate me into some real discomfort. I mean, 19 hours on a plane. But
I can only imagine.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think the United States, Americans need to wake up and realize, hey, we're in the second world. And that's why I'm here in Japan, because I just couldn't survive. I just couldn't do it. I was working all night at as a mental health counselor, working at my job in FSU, and I just couldn't make it. So, bye-bye.
Yeah.
I outsourced myself, basically.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Robert, there's a huge expatriate community in the world at large, and I would hazard a guess that probably 90% of them are progressive or liberal, because you can't help but have a different perspective when you're looking at the United States from outside it.
Of course, right, and I think there's maybe one or two nutholes, but Republicans, but. But yeah, it's a real eye opener when you get to be an expat and you begin to see things in a more clearer fashion. I mean, Bush realized that, and that's why he went after us in the last when he was doing that tax thing for the rich people. He was going to cut our tax exemption and have us pay the money, you know, so double taxes for us, the taxes we pay for in Japan and the taxes in America on top of that. And then he would give that money to the rich people. So,
how oppressive is your tax burden in Japan, Robert?
I pay about 20%, but I'm in the upper, you know, category. So, it's not bad, but you don't see any ghettos here. I mean, there's no ghettos around in my city, and this is a pretty much working class city. And you don't see that many rich people. It's kind of like Norway in a way. I mean, you know, Japan is pretty equitable. I mean, but you know, that's the way it is. So
they're worked to death, but everybody's worked to death.
Right. I mean, we could fix that in one fell swoop. Basically, we regulating overtime. Basically, you could fix that real quickly, and it would do fantastic changes for the society. But you don't see the grinding poverty. I guess that you would see in the States, and we don't have the infant mortality, you know, rates. I want to get back with you on the quality of life issues because I'm doing a relay lecture on this for my university and talking about how Japan rates with other countries and how, you know, I was really surprised about just basically where the Japan was and also the United States, you know. So you think, I mean, do you think the best country to live in, you know, is the United States? And it's not. I mean, I've traveled to about 13 countries, and I found that Austria is a really nice place to live. Germany was nice. Spain was even nice. So, but, now I would have a hard time going back to the United States to live now. I mean, now that I've seen what, you know, it could be. And you wouldn't know what it could be until you've actually traveled. And that's what my wife said when she says, when the Filipinos go back, they're called the Balibayan. And they lived in different countries, and they come back. The first thing they start doing is complaining. And their families say, why do you complain so much? And the answer is, we've seen how much better it is in other places. And the Filipinos there, they don't know how bad it is because they don't know how to compare it to anything.
And that's one of the I would imagine, I'm kind of trying to step into your shoes for a moment, Robert, but I would imagine that that's one of the tragedies about you looking back on the United States. It's heartbreaking to see the incredible wealth that this nation has that it absolutely refuses to use in its own betterment.
Yeah, right. I mean, I went back to my elementary school and to look at it, you know, after 30-odd years, and it hadn't changed, Bob. It hadn't changed. And I lived in an upper-middle-class neighborhood in Tampa. And then I went to look at our little lake, into the public beach on the lake, and it was falling apart. Because the rich people there, they didn't want to believe in the public community beach, and so it was never maintained. It was literally falling apart. And it just blew me away how it actually had gotten worse. And this was a rich, you know, middle-class neighborhood.
Well, there's a mindset that's taken hold here, and I'm especially sensitive to it with regard to where we live in West Virginia, Robert. We live kind of a stone's throw from one of the great natural beauties of the East Coast, the New River Gorge. And there is a plan that has been approved, and it will happen, to put 2,500 McMansions on the rim of the New River Gorge.
Wow.
There's an attitude in this country that beautiful places are for beautiful people.
Right. I remember they were trying to do that in Hawaii when I went there maybe 6-7 years ago. They were in the most beautiful scenic place. There was a rich guy had put up a billboard, and the people in the valley, they were all pretty much Democratic because they realized, you know, they're taking on the tour, and they would tell you about the corporations clear cutting and putting up signs on the most scenic part of Hawaii. So.
Yeah, and they don't care because all they think about is themselves. There's going to be an infrastructure crash that is associated with this McMansion community on the New River Gorge, and it's not just West Virginia; it's everywhere that there's anything nice.
Yeah.
The developer who's doing the gig in West Virginia has already managed to inflame a whole lot of people in Florida, or perhaps Georgia. For the McMansions he built along the Intercoastal Waterway.
Right.
Thereby taking natural beauty away from the people and giving it to, I don't know what to call them.
Yeah.
But there's, well, you know, you can see that looking back at us.
Let me tell you a quick story before I check out here.
Okay.
I mean, I lived in Wakulla County, Florida. And Wakulla County is like the last refuge of, you know, what Florida was like back in the 1960s. There was only like 6,000 people that lived there. So it's right below Tallahassee. And I bought my property there, and very close to Wakulla Springs, which is the largest freshwater springs in the United States. National Geographic studied it. And they were going to put up a strip mall right across from it. And even though I was working a night job and a day job, I managed to, you know, I don't know, go to the paper, write a letter, talk to the commissioners, and stop it. I mean, with me and one other guy. And they reversed the changes, and the developer sued and raised hell. And to make a long story short, it didn't go through. And Then we started a dream zone around Four Color Springs and also Willow River. And basically, I was really surprised by the fact that only a couple of people, if they're really active, they can make incredible change. And then a year later, the reference librarian, I was in Japan at that time, had sent me an article because the developer was trying to do this again now that I was on. And there was a picture of a whole mess of people that were seriously shouting and angry, and they were saying, this is our county, this is not your county. And Robert,
I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt. Your connection has become inaudible. I hope we'll hear from you again very soon, though, okay?
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Robert. Have a wonderful morning. Think of me when you're enjoying your morning tea. That's our good friend Robert from Japan. I'm sorry, I'm still a simpleton, and I'm amazed. I love the concept that I can have conversations during this program with people on the other side of the planet. People who have perspective that we don't have here. And as I often say, perspective is everything. So I tell you what, let's take a break. We'll come back. More of your phone calls, more than welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart distribution centers in Great Britain may be heading for a strike. Workers at the world's largest retailer's distribution depots are seeking collective bargaining rights for all 20 locations, secure payments of a 2005 bonus, and secure work areas. Workers at 9 of the 20 depots are represented by Britain's General Union. They are seeking collective bargaining rights across the board. The employees are also seeking a bonus payment of the equivalent of $11 per week for 2005, based on the reported earnings in 2005 of nearly $1.5 billion in U.S. dollars. The results of the strike ballot will be known the week of June 19th.
Delphi workers at the Dayton, Ohio brake plant are resisting company efforts to stockpile parts in anticipation of a strike. They're using work-to-rule shop floor tactics that slow production. UAW Local 696 member Dan Lamb was just suspended for a week. He says Delphi fired the local union shop chairman and had the union president, Joe Buckley, arrested on the shop floor for refusing to leave the plant during a dispute over safety. The union got the shop chairman's job back. Lamb says Delphi is targeting him and others who are resisting Delphi's attack on working families.
What they've systematically tried to do is disband our union. They've taken away our leadership by not allowing our president to come back in, firing our shop chairman, firing, I think, two or three of our bargaining committee, putting another couple on notice, and then systematically going through the floor and, you know, finding those people that are on the shop floor in leadership, targeting them. Right now, we're just fighting for our jobs. We're fighting for our families. We know we lose our jobs. We take big cuts in our jobs. We're going to lose everything that we have.
Delphi's costs are $4 billion too high. That's according to General Motors CEO Rick Wagoner during a question-and-answer period at a Sanford C. Bernstein & Company conference in New York on Wednesday. Wagoner said Delphi's cost structure is way out of line. GM is currently working on a deal with the auto parts company and workers represented by the United Auto Workers. Delphi is seeking to throw out existing labor contracts in bankruptcy court. Before that happens, the three sides are trying to bang out a out-of-court settlement. Wagoner said the UAW seems to have an understanding of Delphi's situation. Here is today's economic report. India continues to be a country on the rise and full of surprise. In the first 3 months of 2006, the economy grew by 9.3%. Economists were expecting a slowdown for the country because its economy is closely tied to the U.S. economy, which is suspected to be cooling. India's stocks have been on the decline, and India's currency, the rupee, is at its lowest level in 3 years against the dollar.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Glad to have you along. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's about a quarter before the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Oh dear. You know when they give you the full name that they're full of vinegar. Beauregard T. Clampett joins us now. Good evening, Colonel.
Hello there, Bob. How you doing tonight? It's good to talk to you once more time again.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Mr. Clampett.
Well, Bob, you don't sound so excited, Bob. I thought we was good pals and friends there, Bob.
Well, we absolutely are. I'm sorry. I was looking at something. That's what I was. Yeah, I was looking. I was looking at a news story. I'm sorry. I'll devote my full attention now. I apologize.
Well, I'm
happy as a clam.
Bob, I heard you talking earlier about the what you want to call the minute men, but you need to understand, Bob, them fellows there are true patriots there to the southern cause, Bob. You need to understand this. Them fellows, they want to stand on the border, but keep those people. I can't use the words I want to on the air, Bob. You understand?
I understand, and I know the words you want to use. And
they want to keep those people there from coming and invading our country, Bob. And you know, we talked about this several weeks ago, and we both came to a mutual understanding, Bob. Do you remember? Do you recall what that understanding was? Do you recall that?
I understood a lot out of our phone call, Beauregard. Which part are you aiming at? Where we weren't going to talk about repealing the 13th Amendment just yet?
Bob, I've told you, don't bring that back up on the phone with me. That's a sore spot with me, Bob.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought maybe. See, we agreed we weren't. I thought that was the agreement we had.
We took great care of them people there while they was in our care. You need to understand, we fed them and we clothed them and we gave them houses to live in, Bob, and the 13th Amendment come along and treated us like we was a common slave. Wait a minute.
Yeah, bad analogy. Try again.
You know what I'm trying to say, Bob. You know what I'm trying to say.
I do. Beauregard, I got a question for you, though. These patriots down on the border, these minute men, when they're standing on the border looking south toward, you know, Mexico.
Yes.
And I know this is going to be hard for you, Beauregard. It's going to be hard. And it may require counseling, and you're going to have to come to terms with it. But doesn't that make those patriots northerners? And you know what we call northerners, don't you?
You're trying to twist all this up on me, Bob, and it's not going to work. Because I'm going to tell you now, them boys...
They're Yankees.
The border,
Beauregard, they're Yankees.
No, they're not, Bob. Now, you're twisting it all up. You're twisting it all. Them boys down there, they got their fair share of Confederate flags, and they got... Some of them, Bob, even got hoods for the heads like we used to wear back in the 30s, Bob.
In the good old days.
Back in the days, yes, sir. Back in the good old days, you need to remember your history, Bob. The my grandfather, he marched down the Pennsylvania Avenue there in the 30s. We We had a very, very large presence back there. But I'll tell you something, Bob. These folks, you know, we had them here for a while, and we worked them, and they decided they didn't want to work no more, so that's fine. We'll just send them back down there across the border, and then we won't let them come back no more. We can't use them like we want to, but that's okay. We'll find us somebody else we can use. It's plenty of people out there that want good work for no money.
Well, that's mighty true. Is there any particular group you got your eyes set on there, Mr. Clampett?
Well, now, you know, me and Tom DeLay was talking the other day, and Brother DeLay, you know, we was planning because the Southern Baptist Convention is coming up, Bob. You know what that means, don't you? Woo! What a hoe down.
Emphasis on the word hoe. I hear there's going to be a lot of them there.
Well, you never know. It was in Greensboro, North Carolina, so you never can tell. That old city there, that they have their problems. But I just want to tell you, Bob, you know, me and Brother DeLay, we're going to get together. We're going to talk about this thing. You know, see, now, them Marianas, marijuana, Marianas Island or something like that.
You're right, the Marijuana Islands, yes.
He was telling me, them folks over there, hell, they'll work for next to nothing. Now, we can get them over here and work them 12 hours a day and you know, feed them old scraps and stuff like that while we're on to something.
You're onto something indeed. There's that thing I can't talk about again, and that's what I think you're onto. I mean, I think you're going to have to come out and address it sooner or later, Mr. Clampett. Well, there's only one thing that is going to help out this situation for all these patriots that are opposing people wanting to scrub toilets. You have got to get rid of the 13th Amendment.
Why don't you go on and tell me? Tell everybody what that. Let's go on and talk about that thing now, Bob. Let's talk about it for
a minute. Now, Beauregard, you got me up in a lather, and I may have my amendments all wrong, but I do. Isn't it the 13th that gets rid of slavery?
Well, yes. So that was the amendment there that took away the majority of the South's livelihood there, Bob.
And
I got to tell you something, Bob. Now, so had I'm gonna give you this argument, cause you got to think about it for a minute. You know, if it hadn't have been for the 13th Amendment, we probably would still be we would still have our farms are working and our cotton getting pulled and picked and such and so forth and our tobacco. Well, Lordy, we'd have plenty of tobacco. But we see now it's not working that way no more, Bob. All that stuff that's moved all over the world.
I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that, Beauregard. I mean, I bet you even remember why the Mexican War went down.
I thought we was talking about the 13th Amendment, Bob.
Well, we kind of still are, Beauregard. Because in 18, long before that little dust-up, that ugly little war of northern aggression, about 1829, Mexico outlawed slavery.
Well, see, they didn't understand about the economics of things there, Bob. They still don't. That's why they're coming here to work instead of having business down now, see? You got to think about it for me. Think about the big picture, Bob. The big picture is they can't run businesses. All they know how to do is work, Bob, see? They don't know how to run
But Beauregard, I think you're missing the bigger picture here, because what you're going to have to do, you can't just repeal the 13th Amendment in the United States. You're going to have to go down and repeal that anti-slavery amendment in Mexico, because if the rich Mexicans can have Mexican slaves, they won't even be able to come near the border. Now, doesn't that solve all your problems?
You got a point there, Bob. Maybe I'm going to have to brush up on my Spanish,
I understand. It's like a steel trap, this mine. Sometimes it's rusted shut, but every now and then it snaps on something.
You know, I don't hardly ever call, but when I do, I always got to have something to talk about. And tonight, you know, you talk about them minute men. I still got to tell you that them old boys down there, them old boys, they just because they flying some Confederate flags and wearing the Nazi symbol, whatever that was, back in there in the 40s, 30s and 40s, around their necks and acting, you know, and shooting people and such and so forth, doesn't mean they're bad people, Bob. They just misguided.
No. Well, the church people, Beauregard.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I bet you there'd be some of them up here in Greensboro there for the Southern Baptist Convention. I guarantee you there'd be some of them there, sir.
You know there will. You know there... And well, I know you're a Southern Baptist yourself, Beauregard, because after all, you know the Southern Baptist Church, was formed because, well, you know, those people, they didn't want them coming to their nice white churches. That's why the Southern Baptist Convention even exists.
Well,
so I mean, you got to be a Southern Baptist.
You just got to do what you got to do, Bob. You know, I'm a Southern Baptist. Southern.
Yes,
Baptist,
you are.
Well, yeah, you've been twisting my words up, Bob. You're twisting my words. I'm a Southern Baptist born in white bread. You know what I'm saying now, Bob? That's
yeah, I believe it. Amen. Can I get an amen, Beauregard?
That's an amen on that, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you know, as I always like to close every phone call that I give you there, Bob, I just want to say, you know, God bless the southern half of the United States and nowhere else, Bob. Nowhere else.
I understand, and God forgive the rest.
Well, you know, they know not what they do, as the good book says. We got to have pity on them because their souls going to hell. They just don't realize it yet.
Well, I mean, you know, after all, you're a fundamentalist, Beauregard. You're a literalist. I understand completely. And after all, the Bible, the King James Version, there's slaves in the Bible, all through the New Testament, chock full of slaves.
Well,
that must mean, you know, and Jesus didn't say nothing about no slaves.
No, sir. Well, you know, Jesus, let me just tell you about the Son of God. So, you know what, let's go back to wait for another phone call. Even though I know it's prayer meeting night, I want to let your other callers get a good chance to get in on the radio program for yourself, Bob. But I just want to get in on here and let you tell you about them old boys down there on the border. You know, they're saving our country, Bob. It's about saving the country, Bob, from all the heathens and the communist rats.
Even if they are northerners.
You're getting me all hot and bothered, Bob. I'll have to go sit
down. I know. Every time I say northerner, I know.
I'll go sit down and get me a mint julep. It's about that time of the evening, too, Bob, you know.
Put a straw in it, Beauregard. Put a straw in it. Better with a straw.
I so will, Mr. Bob. All right, Mr. Bob.
All right.
Have a good evening. And all you listeners out there, you know, you know, God bless the southern half of the United States and nowhere else. Nowhere else.
And nowhere else. And you as well, Beauregard. You as well. Have a good evening. Our good friend, our southern correspondent, our deep, deep southern correspondent, Beauregard T. Clampett. Didn't handle it too well when he realized that he was talking about northerners down there on the border, did he? Yankees. The Yankees is in Arizona. Oh, Jiminy. So we've already done away with an hour of the program tonight. We're a third of the way through our prayer meeting edition, and I'm still not done with these freaks in Indiana. Oh, no. No. So jump right in line. Share the fun. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. It's prayer meeting edition. Got your prayer hankies? I got mine. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Brazos desnuda ante mi celda, mejor callar y que no me entiendas. Eres la reina en cualquier lugar y yo me dejo. Quieres jugar, pero más es amar. Hago piruetas en tu dedo pulgar, pero eso es todo, no puedo pisar. Porque más es amar.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. A preliminary military inquiry found evidence that U.S. Marines killed 24 Iraqi civilians in an unprovoked attack in November, contradicting the troops' account, U.S. officials said on Wednesday. George W. Bush said he was troubled by news stories on the November 19th killings of men, women, and children in the town of Haditha. And a general at the Pentagon said the incident could complicate the job for the 130,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. Also, the Pentagon reported yesterday that the frequency of insurgent attacks against troops and civilians is at its highest level since American commanders began tracking such figures 2 years ago, an ominous sign that despite 3 years of combat, the U.S.-led coalition forces haven't significantly weakened the Iraq insurgency. Stating for the record what most of us already know, former Vice President Al Gore said that the current Bush administration was, quote, a renegade band of right-wing extremists, end quote. In an interview with London's The Guardian newspaper today, the former Vice President calls himself a recovering politician, but also launches into the political fray more explicitly than he has previously done during his high-profile campaigning on the threat of global warming, denying that his politics have shifted to the left since he lost the court battle for the 2000 election. Mr. Gore says, quote, if you have a renegade band of right-wing extremists who get hold of power, the whole thing goes to the right, end quote. Taking their apology back, the Dixie Chicks aren't seeing any reduction in sales from their anti-Bush stance, as their album, Taking the Long Way, debuts at number one on the Billboard Top 200 Best-Selling Albums chart this week, with first-week sales of 525,829, the Dixie Chicks have become the first female group in chart history to have three albums debut at number one, breaking the record the Chicks established in 2002 when the group's last studio album, Home, debuted at number one and made them the first female group ever to have two albums debut at number one. The Federal Communications Commission is poised to propose new media ownership rules that will allow media companies to own newspapers, television, and radio stations in the same city, according to media watchdog groups. The proposed rule would dissolve a long-standing policy that prohibited corporations from owning a television station and a daily newspaper in the same market. The cross-ownership rule, promulgated in 1975, was enacted to ensure media diversity. Individuals close to the commission say the FCC will propose relaxing media ownership rules possibly as soon as June 15th, when the commission next meets, the media watchdog Free Press has stated. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush takes action to help deploy 44,000 peacekeeping troops to stop the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan. Join them today. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
A CBS News correspondent critically wounded by a car bomb in Iraq that killed two colleagues was heavily sedated and breathing through a ventilator Wednesday at a U.S. military hospital in Germany. Still, Kimberly Dozier reacted to the arrival of her family and boyfriend, according to CBS and Landstuhl Regional Medical Center spokesman Marie Shaw. Shaw said, quote, when her boyfriend visited, she was aware of his presence, end quote. Dozier, an American, was flown to the hospital in southern Germany on Tuesday after sustaining critical injuries on Memorial Day when a car bomb exploded, killing two colleagues and a U.S. soldier and an Iraqi translator. The United States is willing to join European nations in direct talks with Iran if the Iranian government first agrees to suspend its programs to enrich uranium and reprocess spent nuclear fuel, activities that Washington charges are part of plans to build nuclear weapons. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, announcing the U.S. policy shift at a State Department news conference today, warned that if the Iranian government does not choose the path of negotiations and continues to pursue atomic weapons, quote, it will incur only great costs, end quote. But she stopped short of confirming that the United States has obtained agreement from Russia and China to impose United Nations sanctions if Iran does not comply. She said in response to questions after a prepared statement that negotiators are still, quote, working on a package, end quote, that includes potential penalties for noncompliance as well as benefits if Iran accepts the deal. The African Union scrambled to persuade holdout Darfur rebels to sign up to a peace deal for the violence-racked Western Sudanese region hours before a deadline expires. With only one faction of the main rebel group having signed and another giving a flat no to the overture, the AU and its partners were pushing last-minute efforts to bring at least dissident factions on board. The groups have refused to sign the accord aimed at ending 3 years of conflict in Darfur, which has left some 300,000 people dead and 2.4 million homeless. They argue that the deal fails to fully address their concerns. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hope you're having as much fun this Wednesday prayer meeting edition as I am. The phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. I give that number a lot, and I do it because we are sincere here at the Head On Radio Network, whether it is this program, whether it is Joe Vecchio's Cup of Joe, whether it is Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch, whether it's Bruce Birch's own show on Sunday evenings. And I'll even speak for our dear good friend Guy James. We want to afford people the opportunity not to merely blurt out some idea and then be talked over by the host, but an opportunity to carry on a real conversation. That's why we call this conversation radio. So that's why. If you've got something you want to add, something you want to bring to the table, by all means, feel free to do so. Now, back in the first half hour of the program, about an hour ago, a little less than an hour ago, I was sharing with you this story out of Indiana, in which a group of religion industry fiends are protesting daily outside of an adult bookstore. And more than that, they are taking photographs of people leaving or entering, I don't know, the bookstore, and posting them on the internet. I can't tell you how angry this makes me. You know me, I'm the real kumbaya type, you know, no peace, love, you know, let's sing a song, light a candle, you know. But I don't know. I wish I lived close because I come from cranky people, I guess. My mother, God rest her soul, back when Republicans in Alabama were screaming about making up tax shortfalls by raising the tax on liquor and cigarettes. My mom was a cancer survivor, and she quit smoking, and it was a heroic effort on her part. For years, she substituted Brock's butterscotch discs for cigarettes. After she passed away, I think there were still a couple banging around on the bottom of her purse when we cleaned it out. But when the freaks said that, you know, we're gonna balance the budget on the backs of people who drink and smoke, God rest your soul, my mother looked up and looked at my dad and said, "Well, dear, time for us to start drinking and smoking. We got to be good citizens. It's up to us to carry our weight in society. And if we're gonna make this state go on liquor and tobacco taxes, it's our job to consume all the liquor and tobacco we possibly can." Well, I feel about this outfit in Indiana the same way. I wish I was close enough to go to Jackson County, Indiana, Uniontown, Indiana, just off Interstate 65. Because you know what? I would hold my head up high and walk into that place. And I would hold my head up high walking out of it. And the kumbaya singing, peace-loving, candle-lighting part of me would just have to, you know how every now and then Fred Flintstone reaches up on his shoulder and flips that little white little Flintstone angel off his right shoulder and listens to the guy in red on the left. As I was walking out of that, with my head held high, I'm thinking that the first minute I saw a camera pointed at me, there'd be real trouble. You know, this story I've got from the religion industry here. Although many of the members of Warline have been verbally assaulted, so-and-so Patterson says they are committed to holding the line against porn shops in their community. SOB. They've been verbally assaulted. This is another, you know, this is that gang. They think they're persecuted. They have free run of the government. They actively participate in encouraging sexual slavery in places like the Mariana Islands. Yes, they do. Read up on it. I don't have time to do the whole story. You already know it anyway. And they think they're persecuted. Most of them probably have cholesterol and triglyceride counts that would make a doctor run screaming into the night from their well-fed persecution. They've been verbally assaulted. You know, that's when you look at somebody taking your picture against your will to invade your privacy and defame your character and hang it on an internet website, and you say, "Don't take my picture, you sorry seventh son of a syphilitic sea cook. Don't do it. They've been verbally assaulted. Jesus, help us." We're going to hold the line against porn shops in the community. One of these days, this network will be big enough that we can make real problems for creeps like this. And we can get a few thousand people marching in and out of that store. Proudly. I don't know, you know, carrying a copy of the Constitution because it's legal activity. And these freaks are losing their minds over sex. Consensual sex. You know, I noticed this story is absent, utterly devoid, you might say, of any reference to any protest groups by Warline outside gun shops. It's devoid of any mention of protests by Warline outside, oh, I don't know, how about Walmart? How about protests outside a place that profits by human slavery? Walmart. Nope, no. As far as we can tell, Walmart is very good about censoring dirty music, and they don't sell any dirty pictures in there. Well, you know, the wife did bring home some rather naughty underwear from Walmart one day, but we prayed over it and burned it later that night. Now it's strictly white cotton for her. Because we wouldn't want to burn in hell over underwear. No. No, they won't protest a gun shop. They won't protest places that endorse human slavery. Apparently there are no hungry people in Jackson County, Indiana. There are no homeless. That whole litany of if you did this, if you did this, if you did this, if I was hungry and you fed me not, if I was sick, if I was injured, and if you've done it under the least of these, you've done it, and if you've not done it under the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Now, they can't be bothered with any of that. They're afraid somebody might see a naked woman. Because, you know, after all, it's woman's fault. Eve ate that apple and screwed the pooch for all humanity. I don't know. Uniontown, Indiana. Anybody close enough to Uniontown, Indiana to get down there and see if these picture-taken jerks are still present? They say they're picketing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, is this as bothersome to you as it is to me? Are our constitutional... Because, you see, the constitutional challenges always come on the hard cases. You know, there's nothing difficult about saying that the pastor of this freak church, who's probably never worked an honest day in his life, there's nothing tough about saying that he can stand on the street corner and yell, "Oh, the end is near, and the abomination is upon us, and hey, Jesus, and I haven't spat, and speak in tongues." There's nothing tough about that. There's nothing constitutionally challenging. The hard work of the Constitution happens at the Lion's Den just off I-65 in Uniontown, Indiana. And you know what? If you won't stand up for the Lion's Den, you won't stand up for anything else, because that's where, the strip joints, the dirty bookstores, that's where the Constitution is. Because if it can't protect that, it cannot protect you when society finally decides that what you're doing is offensive. Right? Let's take a break. Okay, I'm done with Indiana, I promise. I'm sorry, I just hate people who hate the Constitution. Damn them all to hell. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma, because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
I'd like to tell you about an attacker and how my friend survived. He was hit in the head by a stroke and left unable to speak. He couldn't believe it was actually happening and didn't know what to do, so he didn't get help right away. And it only got worse. His left side got weak and he was helpless. Thankfully, someone realized what was going on and called 911. If they hadn't, my friend wouldn't be here now. If you're attacked by a stroke, call 911 immediately. The sooner you react, the better your chance of survival. I'm glad that he lived, but we're still praying and working on his recovery. So if it ever happens to you or someone around you, get emergency medical help right away. Don't try to deny it's an attack by a stroke. This is Will Downing, friend of a stroke survivor.
Strokes attack African Americans more often. Find out why.
call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost. A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
All right, I'm Bob. This is Ed On. It's a Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. Let's go straight to the phones. David is joining us from near Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's great to talk to you from here in liberal, forward-thinking, open-minded middle of Tennessee, just a little bit north of Nashville. But this Indiana story just will not get out of my head. And, Bob, I got a potentially personal question for you.
Oh, dear. This can't be good.
Well, it might be. Bob, can you walk in high heels?
Huh?
I'm not too sure if I could either, but I'm just thinking, you know, there's got to be Goodwill stores between Nashville, Tennessee and Repressed Urged, Indiana. I got a truck that'll get there, and, you know.
Did you say Repressed Urge, Indiana?
Oh, yeah. It's just down the road from Hidden Boner. I was thinking, you know, by hitting the Goodwill stores between here and there, we could find out if you and I could walk in high heels and fit into kind of a recycled Kate Smith dress, you know, from her singing God Bless America and maybe some
horrible wigs.
And just, you know, get there and buy us one big old red lipstick between the two of us and just show the town of Repressed Urge, Indiana, just how proud two old boys could be to go buy themselves some, condemned porno. Don't you think?
Kind of like that group of Redskins fans in D.C., what, the Hoggets?
Hey. You're catching on, Bob. You're really catching on. Wouldn't it just be some fun?
You've got a handle on something there, David. Because I was thinking during the break. You know, these people outrage me. They really do. I loathe people who hate our constitutional form of government. I just despise them. And this is, you know, this is them.
There's just a little bit of the do it yourself aspect of this, because I heard you say, when this network, you know, trying to affect my best radio voice, which I don't have, I've got a voice made for print, and I understand that. if, you know, you said if we just had thousands of folks, well, Bob, it's going to be a while before we have thousands of folks that you can cause to show up in repressed, urged Indiana. But I thought, dadgummit, me and Bob, we could stumble in there on some bad, chunky shoes and some cheap wigs and badly done lipstick and just, we could have our
own. You know what? You know what's even better? Even better than in this particular instance, under the scenario you've laid out, David, what's even better, don't go in. Stand there and protest with them.
Exactly. Oh, ooh, Bob, you're on to something. That and maybe put.
Stand there and Hosanna, crank up a couple of verses of God Bless America and Standing on the Solid Rock and maybe Little Church in the Wild Urge or Wildwood, I'm sorry.
Get us some nice chunks of toilet paper, cardboard boxes, turn them inside out to make some big old signs, and buy some white shoe polish. God loves us too. Wouldn't it be fun?
Because I was thinking the other alternative would be to create a group of people who are even weirder and more fundamentalist than these to stand across the street and say, "Dear God, please drop a big rock on the sinners across the street because they're not protesting loud enough."
Bob, you're way ahead of yourself. If we lasted through the day in Hidden Boner, Indiana, just south of there, in Repressed Urge, if we lasted till sunset in our funny little outfit, we'd have all the fun. We'd make all the splash because you know, before it's over, Eunice would have that video rolling, and somebody would just have to make a big old red wet one on Walter when he was looking the other way. You know, glancing longingly toward the Hardee's because the sausage biscuits were going to go on sale, 2 for $1.19 in the morning. You know, when he wasn't paying attention, he was thinking about the other thing that really motivates him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm liking this better and better. You know, look, it was good enough for Howard Stern.
Precisely. Well, that's a little too highbrow for what I had in mind.
Well, message for you from the chat room, David.
I'm listening.
Don't shave your legs.
Oh, well, we're really going to cause a stir now because I don't have hair. I have fur. I'm one of those.
That's enough.
I'm one of those throwback guys. I'm one of those guys that, you know, if he takes his shirt off, somebody says, "Is there skin under that?" So anyway, well, Bob, I just...
See, God bless you, because I knew there was some... I was so pissed off about this. You know, I knew there was some fun in here somewhere. And bless you for finding it.
If we could just get there before they pack it in. Well...
Oh, they... No, that's the problem.
I'll stretch.
See, you opened the door on another one, David.
Honey, Dr. Freud, your table is ready. We could have some fun, honey.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Oh, praise the Lord, pass the cover girl. Well, Bob,
and
I
only Paisley. The key word is Paisley.
Oh, big old Paisley. Big, big, big Paisley. And some fake flowers the size of dinner plate. Get blowing up some balloons now, Bob. Well.
Want to stand right there with him and sing Amazing Grace.
Indeed. Oh, indeed.
Right there in Repressed Urge, Indiana.
You got it. Well, I'll get out of the way and let the real callers have their way. Bob,
well, all right, but you may have started something. I don't know. How far? Well, you're right there on I-65. You're near Nashville. How far you reckon it would be up to Repressed Urge?
We could get there.
Why am I suddenly thinking of a Lou Reed song and a line about plucked his eyebrows, then he was a she and said, "Hey, Joe." Oh, my God, what have you done?
You who, sugar? Let's try the wild side.
Oh, God, it's so fun being liberal because we can do that.
Hey, we can make these jokes, and I got to tell you, if it happens, they'll know it when we get there. Our arrival will be documented.
Well, see, you don't know the trouble you're making because Agnes is in the production chat offering to help.
Well, see, she could probably tidy up some of those horrible, grievous mistakes we would make, but we don't want to do it. We got to be careful about doing it too good now. You know, we could start talk at home if we do it.
David, I've seen your picture and you've seen mine. I don't think there's any risk of us doing it too good.
Cha-ching, we have a winner. Get that man a toaster. Bob, take care.
Take care, David.
I shall. You too.
Later now. All right, back. I'm going to catch my breath. Oh, that's just, yeah, a little Goodwill fashion, bad wig. I don't know. I don't think they make size 14. Never mind. Yeah, let's take a break. I'm Bob Kincaid, Ethel Merman, indeed. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Another runner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. With all the attention Iraq is getting, it's easy to forget that the first stop in the war on terror was in Afghanistan, where we knew Osama bin Laden was hanging out. For those of you who know little about Afghanistan's history, a good way to describe it would be the land where empires go to die. Afghanistan has repelled both the British and the Soviet Union, and now we're learning what those two found out, that all the military might in the world isn't enough to tame it. Over the weekend, as we celebrated Memorial Day, riots broke out in Afghanistan's capital city of Kabul following a traffic accident involving U.S. military vehicles that killed 5 people. Afghans started throwing rocks at the vehicles, and soldiers fired either into the crowd or up into the air, depending on who's telling the story. The accident and the aftermath started a huge protest that wound up killing 8 more Afghanis and injuring 100. The U.S. really only controls the city of Kabul and a few miles around it. Since most of our troops are busy in Iraq, we don't have enough in Afghanistan to even think about trying to maintain order outside that sphere. Meanwhile, the Taliban, religious fanatics who make Pat Robertson look like a reasonable person, are slowly but surely reasserting their control over the rest of the nation. It's not as spectacular a failure of neoconservative ideology as is Iraq, but it's still a perfect example of conservative foreign policy. It's quite possible we'll get our asses kicked out of Afghanistan just like the Russians and the British before us. But that's to be expected from people who ignore history and reality. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Son and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs. And soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough.
$40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches.
Oh, I was just having too much fun with that. Great song. Great song. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I needed the mood lightened, and by God, you guys come through. And I appreciate it. Let's go to the phones. Luke has been waiting. Hey, Luke, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank God it was you. I thought my phone had jumped channels there for a while. I was going to make sure it was still you there. It's like, Lordy be, where'd I hit the religion station again? I mean, God. the two of you a minute ago, I was really worried. I figured you brought up Stern. I figured the next thing y'all were going to bring up was going to be, you play for the Bulls. Oh, my mind's going blank all of a sudden.
No, never. Yeah. I know. Not him.
You were talking about cross-dressing, so that's what was coming up next. It's like, ooh, he's a bad looking man. He ain't even qualified as ugly as a woman.
No, that's just a nightmare in pumps.
True. All right, let's get off this subject, please. Did you get the link I sent you today?
I've got it right here in front of me. I haven't had a chance to get to it yet.
Well, we'll talk about that another time. But it's interesting reading. It's one of those things we've been talking about. You know. How the government can get information without getting information.
So, right.
But one thing I want to remind you is, and you and Agnes, is that about 30 minutes, I guess it is, or 20 minutes, you'll have the Dixie Chicks over on Larry King Live, the greatest misnomer on the planet.
Larry King, curiously embalmed. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. Between him and Don Imus, it's more like the Night of the Living Dead sometimes, you know.
Right.
We're like, damn it, get a steak, put through his heart, just be done with it.
For Larry King, it's silver bullets. I mean, he laughs at crosses, holy water, and stakes through the heart.
Well, you know how it is. The thing is, you got to get the suspenders off of him. That's the problem.
Now, see, and you, Luke, were like after me over the whole thing with the, and you're talking about getting Larry King's suspenders.
That's where fire comes from. You know how it is. It's sort of, I switched over for about 20 seconds on Hardball tonight, and of course saw Chris Matthews is deep into his obsession as it's like the Hillary watch. It's like, God.
It's like, oh, Lord.
He'd not be satisfied if he had a camera in the bedroom with him. I mean, God.
Well, this thing that went down last week, did you catch this out of the Post or the Washington, New York Times? Yeah, where they tried to catalog how many times they've been together, you know, why didn't they just go up and ask them, you know, you guys still doing it?
Well, the thing got me, I liked somewhere I saw it, maybe it's BuzzFlash, they said, you know, said, what was it they counted like in a month is like 14, and they said, well, dang, people who are over the road truckers would think, God, that's an overabundance, you know. You know, they're happy if they see their spouses on the weekend, you know. So, but I every time I hear Matthew do this, I just want to just go, you know how we used to talk about things you'd like to just kind of have a little speaker behind them, and you'd like to go Swiss Miss. It's like you're awful dang interested in Bill Clinton's sex life, but when it was Dick Cheney's, you sure weren't.
No. Well, see, I think there's an assumption in right-wing land that Dick Cheney's just a little too roboticized at this point. At best, he could have sex with, like, Bender from Futurama.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's just interesting, though, how in that case, they did everything they could not to cover it. And in this one, they're doing everything they can to cover it, to the point of of when you listen to him, they take absolutely no facts, and he's already got a scenario written out essentially on it. You know what I mean?
Well, look, I mean, we're dealing with a really dirty-minded bunch. I'm not nearly so worried about somebody going in to get a picture of, you know, a magazine of, you know, biker babes gone wild inside, you know, at a store in Indiana, as I am these sick SOBs in the Republican Party, who are horribly repressed, terribly ashamed, and among the nastiest people. You know, I mean, they're how many stories, Luke? You've been listening for a while. How many stories have we had about right-wing religion industry Republicans getting caught with children?
Oh, I tell you. Well, I mean, remember the one, isn't it interesting, though, the way they cover it, depending on whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican? Isn't it amazing how that story, I guess, no, now it's probably been 4 or 5 months ago. Remember the story out in Arizona? The one about the boys at the camp?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that one just disappeared. You know, I mean, that one, when I first read that, I thought, my gosh, this is going to be Nancy Grace and Greta Van Susteren will be having a fight over who gets to cover this one. And they
won't
even touch it.
No, well, you know, again, they don't... Any case that has clear Republican criminal implications, you will never see on Nancy Grace. You won't hear it about on Greta. God knows Glenn Beck won't touch it. Bingo Billy Bennett, nope. You know, no. It's only these ambiguous... And see, they won't mention the fact, and I'm going to go ahead and say it here and probably piss somebody off, Luke. But I can guarantee you, just from the looks of things, I could probably sit here and give you a psychological profile of Natalie Holloway's mama and daddy or stepdad or whatever, and be pretty close to spot on.
Well, you know, the thing that still to this day always bugs me on this, on all these are not national stories.
Hell no.
You know,
no, they're not.
You are right now, it might be a big story. You know what I mean? They're from Alabama. Okay. You know, in that section of the country, in the state, that's reasonable. I mean, if that was leading their storyline, I can understand it. But it's like, say, imagine if you were living in upper Oregon or Washington state. You're going, why are we covering this?
Well, exactly. And the, you know, the thing, and we've talked, this is a horribly, horribly repressed nation. And you know, I don't, like I said, I don't care what people go out and do on their own time. With their own money and by their own consent. But the fact of the matter is, that little girl, that little Holloway girl, God rest her soul, I reckon, that child felt like she had to leave the United States and go almost all the way to South America, because that's where, you know, Aruba is.
Yeah.
Unless I'm just geographically confused.
Well, off the floor.
In order,
we'll go that far.
In order to get all liquored up and carouse, when in fact if her parents had had a sane attitude about substances and actually sitting down and talking with their kid, odds are it would not have happened. And I realize that's cold and cruel, Luke, and I apologize for that, but you know, there's a lot of truth in it.
Well, it's like right now, you know, I know you have to pay attention to this, you know, where they just upped all these fines for the FCC, you know,
right,
fold. And it's like, you know, isn't it amazing, though? It's like we've always said, isn't it amazing how for 2 seconds of showing a part of Janet Jackson, they would sooner show decapitations live than let you see that for 2 seconds. You know what I mean? That they would just assume take you over to Saudi Arabia and show you them lining them up and playing with the longsword.
Well, but and even closer to home. The real comparison, Luke, is the fact that CBS was fined more for Janet Jackson's breast than International Coal Group will be fined for the deaths of 12 human beings.
Agreed. It's one of those things. It's like, say, they want to claim they're the Republicans always want to claim they're the party of morals. It's like, explain me how this is more moral. I mean, you're ashamed of what God, as you say, you're religious people, you're ashamed of what God made. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, you know, I'm a great believer that, you know, the human body's a beautiful thing.
Sure, some of them.
Haven't maintained them real well, but such is life.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things, it's like, say, you know, it's amazing how after we made sin, after they sinned, when they started wearing clothes, you know.
Yeah.
But that's well, what they think the crime now is that. But like you say, death, like, you and I know both know how the Appalachians are. I mean, we can show some things. I mean, I've seen some things on Frontline and stuff, and I've been some places up in my mountain, and I'm sure you have in yours, that would be just downright almost pornographic, you know, just in what you see. I mean, nothing dirty, but you know what I mean. The squalor.
Yeah, see, I have a different definition of pornography and obscenity. Watching children suffer inside the United States, to me, is obscenity, and I think you share the same sentiment, Luke. But you know, we can just drive by that. That's no big deal.
I know. It's amazing though if you've ever been over to Europe or something, and you sit and watch one afternoon of TV, you realize that dang, it puts HBO to shame. Showtime.
Oh sure. And you know, one of the things I'd love, and I wish there was some way to get at it. I forget what time it is, late at night, early morning hours, when like Comedy Central stops running any program and just runs 4 hours of Girls Gone Wild ads.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the demographics on that, because I can guarantee you that the Girls Gone Wild videos probably sell hotter in North Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, you know, the godly red states. Yeah, they sell better there than they do in any of those heathen blue states, and you and I both know it.
Oh yeah, well, you know, it's like I say that, you know, they're the people that, what is it? I think they doth protest too much.
Exactly.
they have to scream about the things they want to see the most. But,
well, you know, see, that's the thing. I really do believe that every time the door opens at that little joint in Indiana, all the fundies are trying to peek in to see if they can just see a little bit of something.
It's one of those things, like we say, every time we turn around and they have one of the scandals up in Washington. It's like, say, you're going to find a Republican somewhere at the bottom of all this. You know what
I mean? Oh yeah.
So, but that's just the way it goes around, I tell you. All right,
it is.
I'm gonna let you go on, but I know you got
all right,
to keep the call.
All right, you take it. You take it easy, Luke. Thanks for your thoughts.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye now. Let's see. Oh, the break. I'm sorry. Yeah, not watching the clock. Shame on me. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. I can't say it any more plainly. Your thoughts are more than welcome. Of course, I got a couple of stories down here I still want to get to. But you come first. This is the Head On Radio Network.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't be, that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Hey, yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. Straight to the phones. I'm told Jim is calling in. Hey, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hey. How you doing, Bob?
Doing good. Yourself?
Oh, reasonably well. I was just listening, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Who's been cross-dressing?
Oh, no one. No one. It was a suggestion that David made. For protesting against the fundamentalists outside the dirty bookstore.
Now, where is this?
It is in Uniontown, Indiana.
Okay. Now, what's going on there, if you'll bring me up to speed quickly?
Right-wing fundamentalists are photographing people coming in and out of the store and putting their photographs. They're protesting 24/7, 365, and they're taking photographs of people entering the store or, better yet, coming out of the store and posting their photographs on the Internet.
You mean one of these adult peep show type things? That's what they're doing? That's all they have time to do is to sit out there and take pictures?
Yeah, and then post the people doing, you know, legal stuff, posting it on the Internet.
My goodness. You know, somebody pulled a trick on me one time because there was one of those places in Columbia where you could go in and get all kinds of novelties and stuff like that, and this guy called me up and he said, you know, their license tag was on TV out in front of such a porn shop or something on Two Notch Road. And I was stupid enough to believe him.
Well, these people aren't funning.
It's crazy thing in the world.
These people are for real. They're willing to try to harm other people for doing things that are absolutely legal. I mean, It's the same thing as, you know, taking pictures of people coming out of the liquor store, but they won't do that because the preacher might get caught.
Well, now, you know, there's one like here in Beckley called the Blue Moon.
Yeah.
And this guy is always kidding about being seen at the Blue Moon. And I told him, I said, look, I said, that place is a confessional. I said, those booths are confessionals in there. had those holes inside. I mean, he was always, I saw your car at the Blue Moon. I've never been to the Blue Moon bookstore in my life.
Oh, too much information, Jim.
If it were true, I wouldn't be telling you. Hell, but, I mean, I don't give a damn. But I said, that's what they are. He was just a friend of mine who loves to bust my chops about, I don't know, anything he can. But that is just, I don't know, it's just so ridiculous. I mean, it's just these people who don't have any more to do than something like that.
Well, it's mean-spirited, too, and that's what gets to me, and it's a threat to our freedoms.
Well, you know, back in Indiana, speaking of Indiana, but back when the Klan was at its height, you remember the woman named Marge Oberholzer?
Yeah.
Remember her? What happened to her? Big member of the Klan, and how she was abducted and raped, and she died. And it was one of the things that signaled the end of the Klan, when they got one of the big members of it, who had taken this woman off and just physically and horribly violated her, you know?
Yeah.
Remember that story about her?
Well, yeah, and this is the moral equivalent of the same bunch.
Yeah, basically, Klan.
Because like I said, Jim, you won't catch them protesting outside of a gun shop.
No.
You won't.
No, you
no, no. The things, the places where real societal evil is manifested, they don't have any worries about. But they are, you know, as but you know, it's corollary to the religion industry that they're absolutely sex obsessed. I've got an email here from one of our friend Sue on Big Coal River, who wrote in, and you know, what a perfect description. She said, I can see the picketers now. You could recognize them anywhere. Long denim skirt, white blouse, flat shoes, hair in a bun, and a look on their face like they've been sucking lemons all day. She says, maybe somebody should take their picture or a picture of their license plates and put it on the Internet, doctor it up a little bit, remove the picket sign so it looks like they're going into the store, and put a title on it, something like Born Again's Gone Wild. I like that idea, too.
Are they picketing the bookstore up there?
Yeah. Well, no, that's the book. It's in Jackson County, Indiana, Uniontown,
okay.
Indiana.
Uniontown, okay.
You know, yeah, they it sits right there by the interstate, and they're having a full bore right wing religion industry hissy over it.
Well, you know, these people could be doing a lot of good elsewhere, helping people rather than trying to hurt people.
Jim, you have a truly charitable spirit, but the fact of the matter is,
that's what I don't understand, you know, as far as
they can't help. They don't, they're not, they can't do any good because they themselves aren't good. They are wicked people.
I mean, they could be helping out at a soup kitchen, or they could be doing volunteer work at a hospital or something like that, but no, they want to get out there and make asses of themselves to get themselves on TV or build some type of bizarre form of self-gratification, which is driven by God only knows what.
But you see, Jim, they think that sex is a problem. Well, that's the thing. They think that sex is the problem in America. They don't, you know, they don't know anything about the teachings that we get out of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, any of that. They think that sex is the problem. They don't give a tinker's damn about hunger or poverty or suffering or homelessness or any of the things that Jesus actually concerned himself with.
Those things are too hard for them to deal with. It's easy to pick on sex and stuff like that. Besides, a lot of them, I think, the sort of activity appeals to their prurient interest, if you know what I mean.
It absolutely does. I mean, they're doing this because their minds are dirtier than anybody else's going in or out of the building.
Yeah, they get a big HO doing this kind of stuff, and it is kind of it is stupid. It just tells me where their minds really are.
Yeah, and they're evil people.
Bookstore, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know, they're not hurting anybody. You know, they're not doing anything. I mean, nobody's put a gun to their head to make them be there or whatever. But I mean, they're just doing what they do, and you know, whether it's they're looking through the magazines or watching the nasty movies or whatever, at least they're doing it behind closed doors and they're not making a spectacle of themselves like these people are. And
yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm no apologist for peep shows and stuff like that, but I mean, you just can't legislate morality to the degrees that these people want to. I mean, I'll defend the church in a heartbeat, and you know that. But, I mean, when it comes to stuff like this, I mean, these people, if they really had good intentions, would be in other places where the public good would manifest itself.
Right, if they had any good in their hearts, but they don't. This is the front end of my argument about the fact that these people have no reason to call themselves Christians or followers of Jesus or anything like that. Nothing at all, Jim.
No, they certainly don't. And they're certainly headed by one of the biggest hypocrites. I mean, one of their idols is one of the biggest hypocrites that ever sat in the White House. Good God in heaven, I just can't believe that man.
Yeah, and you can't tell me that he hasn't ogled the centerfold of Playboy or whatever a few times himself. Jim, we're out of time. Got to roll.
Later.
All right, have a great evening. Bye now. All right, news time. Bring them on, your thoughts. More than welcome. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Should your adolescent brain, schoolboy stuff, a sticky sweet romance, she makes you wanna scream, wishing you could get inside her pants. So you bend inside the way while you're squeezing her.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. A preliminary military inquiry found evidence that U.S. Marines killed 24 Iraqi civilians in an unprovoked attack in November, contradicting the troops' account, U.S. officials said on Wednesday. George W. Bush said he was troubled by news stories on the November 19th killings of men, women, and children in the town of Haditha. And a general at the Pentagon said the incident could complicate the job for the 130,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. Also, the Pentagon reported yesterday that the frequency of insurgent attacks against troops and civilians is at its highest level since American commanders began tracking such figures 2 years ago, an ominous sign that despite 3 years of combat, the U.S.-led coalition forces haven't significantly weakened the Iraq insurgency. Stating for the record what most of us already know, former Vice President Al Gore said that the current Bush administration was, quote, a renegade band of right-wing extremists, end quote. In an interview with London's The Guardian newspaper today, the former Vice President calls himself a recovering politician, but also launches into the political fray more explicitly than he has previously done during his high-profile campaigning on the threat of global warming, denying that his politics have shifted to the left since he lost the court battle for the 2000 election. Mr. Gore says, quote, if you have a renegade band of right-wing extremists who get hold of power, the whole thing goes to the right, end quote. Taking their apology back, the Dixie Chicks aren't seeing any reduction in sales from their anti-Bush stance, as their album, Taking the Long Way, debuts at number one on the Billboard Top 200 Best-Selling Albums chart this week, with first-week sales of 525,829, the Dixie Chicks have become the first female group in chart history to have three albums debut at number one, breaking the record the Chicks established in 2002 when the group's last studio album, Home, debuted at number one and made them the first female group ever to have two albums debut at number one. The Federal Communications Commission is poised to propose new media ownership rules that will allow media companies to own newspapers, television, and radio stations in the same city, according to media watchdog groups. The proposed rule would dissolve a long-standing policy that prohibited corporations from owning a television station and a daily newspaper in the same market. The cross-ownership rule, promulgated in 1975, was enacted to ensure media diversity. Individuals close to the commission say the FCC will propose relaxing media ownership rules possibly as soon as June 15th, When the commission next meets, the media watchdog Free Press has stated, "You're listening to News on the Horn, the head-on radio network."
Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush takes action to help deploy 44,000 peacekeeping troops to stop the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan. Join them today. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
A CBS News correspondent critically wounded by a car bomb in Iraq that killed two colleagues was heavily sedated and breathing through a ventilator Wednesday at a U.S. military hospital in Germany. Still, Kimberly Dozier reacted to the arrival of her family and boyfriend, according to CBS and Landstuhl Regional Medical Center spokesman Marie Shaw. Shaw said, quote, "When her boyfriend visited, she was aware of his presence," end quote. Dozier, an American, was flown to the hospital in southern Germany on Tuesday after sustaining critical injuries on Memorial Day when a car bomb exploded, killing two colleagues and a U.S. soldier and an Iraqi translator. The United States is willing to join European nations in direct talks with Iran if the Iranian government first agrees to suspend its programs to enrich uranium and reprocess spent nuclear fuel, activities that Washington charges are part of plans to build nuclear weapons. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, announcing the U.S. policy shift at a State Department news conference today, warned that if the Iranian government does not choose the path of negotiations and continues to pursue atomic weapons, quote, "it will incur only great costs," end quote. But she stopped short of confirming that the United States has obtained agreement from Russia and China to impose United Nations sanctions if Iran does not comply. She said in response to questions after a prepared statement that negotiators are still, quote, "working on a package," end quote, that includes potential penalties for noncompliance as well as benefits if Iran accepts the deal. The African Union scrambled to persuade holdout Darfur rebels to sign up to a peace deal for the violence-racked Western Sudanese region hours before a deadline expires. With only one faction of the main rebel group having signed and another giving a flat no to the overture, the AU and its partners were pushing last-minute efforts to bring at least dissident factions on board. The groups have refused to sign the accord aimed at ending 3 years of conflict in Darfur, which has left some 300,000 people dead and 2.4 million homeless. They argue that the deal fails to fully address their concerns. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Where's Bob? Here's Bob. I'm Bob. This is Head On, Wednesday night, prayer meeting edition. And I'm gonna verge away from the prayer meeting theme for a little bit. We talked last night a little bit about the Supreme Court case, Garcetti versus, what was it, Ceballos, that limited Americans' free speech rights. Well, there's another one out. Tonight's case. Oh, by the way, I want to make an announcement. Okay, then do. Tomorrow night, joining us by phone, and you will really enjoy this conversation, I do believe, author and activist Greg LeRoy will be joining us, author of The Great American Jobs Scam. You remember a week or so ago we talked about the Kuno case, Kuno versus Daimler Chrysler, in which all nine members of the Supreme Court gathered together to gang up on taxpayers and said, just because you pay the bills to run this country, you don't have a right. That doesn't give you a right to go into court and complain about how the money's being spent or thrown away or given away in this case. Greg LeRoy has analyzed and can lay out in the clearest possible terms just exactly what kind of ripoff is taking place in these so-called economic development schemes. He'll be joining us tomorrow night. I hope you'll be here with us for that. No. This latest case is Jordan versus Alternative Resources Corp. And there's a quote in here. And I want you to understand, I'm not trying to put anybody off. But there is a difference between the gratuitous use of language that is arguably bad. Of course, I don't believe there's any such thing as a bad word. Or a dirty word. It takes a dirty mind to make a dirty word. But it's a part of this case. And there are other instances of it as well. And frankly, I think that if we were even a remotely intellectually honest nation, we would draw a distinction between news and exclamations and the prurient use of language. If we feel like we've got to engage in some level of censorship, we should at least have enough freedom for the press. But anyway, you know, this is the internet. So I don't have to be afraid of some guy who lives in mortal fear of L. Brent Bozo III and his families for television and radio decency or any of that other garbage. I don't have to be afraid of the American Family Association or Reverend James Dobson, because this right here, the internet, this is the First Amendment with its boots on the ground. This is freedom of speech. Frankly, I could cut loose with a string of invective that would raise generations of little old blue-haired ladies in my ancestry straight up out of the ground. But I'm not going to do it. We should be able to talk about things without resorting to what is commonly referred to as vulgarity. But there is a word involved in this story, and I'm going to say it. I have never said this into a microphone ever before. Because it's central to this case. Jordan versus Alternative Resources Corporation. The Jordan in the case is Robert Jordan. He is an African-American. At the time, he was working for IBM in Montgomery County, Maryland. All right? And this sort of goes hand-in-hand with the conviction yesterday of John Allen Muhammad, because some of this turns on that. Because in October 2002, he and some of his coworkers there at IBM were standing around watching television reports of the capture of John Allen Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo, the D.C. snipers. As they stood there watching, one of Jordan's co-workers blurted out, and I quote, "If you have any problems with any particular language, you know, just walk out of the room or something, and then you can walk back in about 5 seconds from now." One of his co-workers said, "They should put those two black monkeys in a cage with a bunch of black apes and let the apes fuck them." All right? Now, yesterday's case, Garcetti versus Ceballos, turned on whistleblowers and whether or not a whistleblower has a right to blow the whistle. So what Jordan did, and you know, and it's kind of central to the case that he is an African-American man, but I can tell you that as a pink person, I ain't white, I'm pink, as a pink person, I would be offended, but it wouldn't carry for me the baggage that it probably carried for Robert Jordan. That's why, as a pink person, I really feel like I'm compromised in complaining about the Confederate flag. I think that thing is odious. It's reprehensible to fly it. Disgusting. To me, as a pink person. I can't imagine what it must conjure up in the mind or the psyche of an African American. Night riders, sheets, lynchings, crosses burning in the middle of the night. Don't let the sun set on you here, boy. All right? I'm sorry about the word, but it's part of the case. I won't do it again. But that is what this racist thing said. So Robert Jordan discussed the remark with a couple of his other coworkers. And this creep, his name was Farja. He discussed the case with his coworkers, and they told him that Farja had made similar remarks frequently in the past. Now, IBM has a mandatory, you know, you don't follow this policy and you can hit the bricks, a mandatory policy of anti-harassment. So, following that policy, Jordan reported Farja's behavior to his supervisors. By the time a month had turned around, IBM had changed Jordan's shift so that he couldn't pick his son up from school anymore. His boss made a crude remark to him at a holiday party. And Jordan had been with the company for 4 years, and they turned around and fired him. Now, bear in mind, it's not just IBM's anti-harassment policy. There's also the Civil Rights Act of 1964, against which George H.W. Bush voted, by the way. And it outright forbids bosses from retaliating against employees who report discrimination in the workplace, for God's sakes. And that includes hostile work environments created by virtue of racist conduct. They fired him. Okay, Bob, so what? I promise this was not a gratuitous excuse to use that word. Well, it turns out a couple of weeks ago, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most conservative, hateful, Republican-riddled circuit court in this country, said that what IBM did was okay. They upheld IBM firing Robert Jordan because he followed their rules and the law of the land and turned in this miserable little low-rent wannabe Klansman for saying they should put those two black monkeys in a cage with a bunch of black apes. Now, what the court said was that Jordan wasn't listen to this. This is why I say what I say about being a pink person and really not being able to, you know, I don't have the ground. I don't have the background to really understand what a Confederate flag says beyond my own understandings of history. But these hateful old white people on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals said that Jordan wasn't blowing the whistle on what a reasonable person would perceive as unlawful They said he was reporting nothing more than a, quote, unique and never to be repeated incident. And that incident did not reflect a fully ripened or planned racially hostile work environment. They said that the comment wasn't enough to be protected under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act 1964. By the way, this is Judges Niemeyer and Widener. Anybody care to guess who appointed them? Paul Niemeyer, of course, was appointed by Daddy Bush. H. Emery Widener was appointed by Richard Nixon. My God. How long has Widener been on the bench? 30 years? 30 plus years? And this guy hasn't figured out that referring to African Americans as monkeys is racist? But then again, he was appointed by a man who used to sit there in the Oval Office on tape and talk about how the Jews run Hollywood. Nixon, of course, his people invented the Southern strategy to try to scare Southern Democrats into the folds of the Republican Party out of nothing but abject fear that, they're going to get your white women if you're not careful. Where are the white women at? And there's it's cases like this. I went and read the article that was referenced last night on the program by Noam Chomsky. The name of that article is Why It's Over for America. You can, if you want to read it for yourself, you can go over to WD40.com, our good friends there. D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40, WD40.com. An inability to protect its citizens, the belief that it is above the law, a lack of democracy, three defining characteristics of the failed state. And that, says Noam Chomsky, is exactly what the U.S. is becoming. Any questions? Any questions at all? Now, Judge King, also on that particular panel, pointed out that it doesn't take a particularly sensitive soul to discern just how profoundly insulting and just how profoundly revealing Farge's deep hostility towards African Americans and his black monkey epithet was. He was writing in the minority, Judge King. He said that the epithet plays on historic bigoted stereotypes that have characterized African Americans as uncivilized, non-human creatures that are intellectually and culturally inferior to whites. He said only a tortured reading of Title VII, one that imagines a fanciful world where bigots announce their intentions to repeatedly belittle racial minorities at the outset, could compel the opposite conclusion. The conclusion, in other words, that the damned right-wing, racist, Republican court reached. Yeah, failed state, Noam Chomsky, maybe you're onto something, brother. And Judge King, in his dissent, also had some nice words for the fine folks at Big Blue, IBM. Quote, IBM's use of the machinery of justice has placed its employees in exactly that unenviable situation. IBM's position in this appeal, ratified by the majority's decision, is that it can, with impunity, fire employees because they have reported harassing and racially charged conduct. This position is fundamentally inconsistent with Title VII and the notion of an effective anti-harassment policy, and it should alarm IBM's employees. Yet, as IBM's lawyers acknowledged at oral argument in other judicial forums, IBM actually markets its anti-harassment policy as a mode of Title VII compliance. Ah, oh, Bob, don't worry. You know, this thing will go. I mean, that was just the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. This thing will get appealed. This thing will go up to the Supreme Court. This thing will get overturned. No, nobody in their right mind would think that a man standing there talking in front of an African-American talking about they ought to put those black monkeys in a cage with some black apes and let them. Well, I'm not going to say it again. Nah, that'll get fixed up at the Supreme Court. I mean, that's the highest court in the land. They're not going to sit there and tolerate ugly, nasty, blatant, over-the-top racism. Hell no, they're not. Yes, they are, thank you, Senator Byrd, because Samuel Alito is sitting on the court, baby. Because Samuel Alito, who, when he was on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, wrote an opinion that said it was all right. It was A-OK, baby. It was A-OK. For an employer to refuse to hire a human being because of nothing more than the color of his skin. How many Democrats voted for Samuel Alito? How many Democrats voted for Judge Widener? How many Democrats in the Senate once upon a time voted for Robert King? Or not Robert King, no, Paul Niemeyer. And see, here's the difference. Paul Niemeyer, like I said, Pappy Bush appointee. H. Emory Widener, Nixon appointee. Judge King, who made such an alarmingly good sense, Clinton appointee. He's a liberal. He's going to impose his liberal values on the Fourth Circuit. Apparently, liberal values include pointing out that only a tortured reading of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, one that imagines a fanciful world where bigots announce their intentions. Okay, I'm going to be bigoted now. To repeatedly belittle racial minorities at the outset could compel the majority's conclusions. This is Lord God, Billy Bob. This is disgusting. But see, that was just the minority opinion that Judge King wrote, and Robert Jordan is out of a damn job. Robert Jordan had a shift that allowed him to get off work in time to go and pick up his little boy at school. But Messieurs Justices Widener and Justice Niemeyer decided that, well, screw those Republican family values, because we don't want African American men acting like, you know, fathers. In return for pointing out that they had an ugly little Klansman in their midst, the bosses at IBM made it so that Mr. Jordan couldn't pick up his little boy at school. Man, there's a great American corporation. Oh, yes, we have a great Title VII anti-harassment policy. Well, we won't tolerate it. But by God, if somebody tells us that it's been broken, we will fight him all the way to the Supreme Court, and we will can him for daring to stand up. Anybody want to stand up and sing? How about a rousing chorus of God Bless America? This is head on. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
This is the Labor Report from the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. In the latest brutal attack against the Iraqi trade union movement, the General Federation of Iraqi Workers has reported the kidnapping and murder of Tabat Hussein Ali, head of the General Trade Union for Health Sector Workers, on April 27th. Ali was taken by a group as he was leaving his union's headquarters in Baghdad's Al-Mansur neighborhood. His body was found the next day riddled with gunshot wounds and showing evidence of brutal torture, including by an electric drill. No word on who was responsible for his murder. The largest union of university teachers in Britain yesterday adopted a resolution encouraging an academic boycott of Israel. The decision by the National Association of Teachers in Further and Higher Education, which has 69,000 members, enjoins members to consider boycotting Israeli academics and academic institutions that do not publicly take an explicit stand against the apartheid policies and discriminatory policy in the field of education. The Guardian reported that the resolution, passed at the annual conference, aroused controversy, and at the end of the debate, 53% of conference delegates supported it, while 38% voted against and the rest abstained. The resolution passed despite an aggressive and extensive campaign waged by Israeli organizations and Jewish groups in Britain and the United States. The head of the labor union that represents U.S. Border Patrol agents said Sunday the sweeping immigration reform bill passed by the Senate last week will do little to stop the revolving door he sees daily along the nation's border. In his first public speech since passage of the Senate's bill, T.J. Bonner told a Las Vegas gathering of those opposed to illegal immigration that lawmakers had created, quote, amnesty on steroids, end quote. After describing what he considers decades of failed policies, Bonner said the solution isn't more Border Patrol agents, National Guard troops, technology, or walls on the U.S.-Mexico border. The answer, he said, is to, quote, turn off the employer magnet and focus on the reason people are crossing borders, end quote. Still reeling from a defeat at the National Labor Relations Board in March, Starbucks was hit with a fresh legal charge from the IWW Starbucks Workers Union today. The Labor Board charge outlines continuing discrimination and retaliation against union baristas by the world's largest coffee chain. The legal filing and supporting evidence established that Starbucks had breached the settlement agreement reached with the government less than 3 months ago. The unfair labor practice charge contests final warnings before termination against three IWW Starbucks Workers Union members, Suli Ayala, Daniel Gross, and Tomer Malchi. Starbucks disciplined the three because of their continued participation in an organizing drive to win a living wage, secure hours, and respect on the job. Ironically, Mr. Gross's first final warning before termination for union activity was rescinded by the recent government settlement of IWW charges against Starbucks. Less than 2 months later, Starbucks concocted another one against him. And this has been the Labor Report from the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
You've been around for such a long time now. Oh, maybe I could leave you, but I don't know how. And why should I be lonely every night when I get
All right, we're downhill now. Downhill to the end of the program. About 26 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hope you're having as much fun as I am. Moving on. Okay, there's Vernon Robinson. No, I don't want to get to Vernon yet. Vernon's like a caricature from Chappelle's show, for God's sakes. Speaking of pro-life, you know, the family values crowd in the Republican Party. Well, if you liked Haditha, you're going to love this. U.S. forces killed two Iraqi women, one of them about to give birth. Boy, how's that for your partial birth abortion? When the troops shot at a car that failed to stop at an observation post in a city north of Baghdad. Nabiha Nisaif Jassim. She was 35 years old. And they were racing her to the maternity hospital in Samarra. Her brother was driving. When she was snuffed. Now, she was 35 and pregnant and in labor when they blew her away. But Republicans don't need to... Republicans want the good news out of Iraq. Well, the good news is she had two other little children who weren't in the car. Hey, good news from Iraq! The two little children weren't in the car to get wasted by terrified American soldiers sick and tired of walking around with a target on their backs. Who are so terrified of everything that is going on around them that they'll shoot at anybody who doesn't slow down. Because after all, you know, everybody we send to Iraq is given intensive Berlitz-style instruction in speaking Arabic, not. But, you know, we're Americans, so we think if we say stop and you don't stop, then what we'll do, because we expect the world to speak English, after all, we want it to be our national language. What we'll do is we'll yell stop even louder. Anybody ever driven a woman in labor to the hospital? I have. It was Christmas night, 1995. The bird was just coming out of the oven. Mom was still with us. Agnes said, honey, I think it's time. Little dude was due that day. Mom looked up and said, don't worry, I'll take the turkey out. We'll have a nice Christmas dinner. You kids go on. We'll look after the girls. There was about 9 inches of snow on the ground because, you know, state government is not going to pay some Department of Highways guy triple time to come out and plow the roads on Christmas, and nobody has any business being on the roads on Christmas anyway. And I got to tell you, I don't care if somebody yelled stop at me in English or any other language. I wasn't stopping. Now, I wasn't flying. Like I said, 9 inches of snow on the roads. I was in four-wheel low lock and cruising down I-79 to Charleston to Women's and Children's Hospital. Doing about 20 miles an hour and wishing I could do about 70 miles an hour more. But I wasn't stopping for anyone. It's one of the beauties of the mind. It's a sweet little movie that I play in my mind every now and then. Some drunk coming home from Christmas dinner raced past us. Literally doing about 80. And I looked at Agnes and I said, he's going to die. And right there in front of us, about 100 yards ahead, he went into a slide, rolled 3 times, and slammed into a mountainside. I'm sorry. That's a memory. Fascinating, isn't it? So Nabiha Nisaif Jassim had looked at her brother. Why her brother? Well, I don't see it here, but daddy's probably dead. She looked at her brother and said, "Brother, it's time to go to the hospital." And he said, "Sister, let's go. Someone else will look after the children. We have to get you to the hospital." And they were in a hurry. They were in a hurry to the hospital in Samarra. Because there is so much death in Iraq that when you get an opportunity to experience new life, you don't want to mess it up. You just don't want to mess it up. Now, a military spokesman said, and I quote, "Shots were fired to disable the vehicle. Coalition forces later received reports from Iraqi police that two women had died from gunshot wounds, and one of the females, may have been pregnant." See, they're females. They're not women. One of the females may have been pregnant. One of the female things. One of the female subhumans. One of the female hajis. Jassim's brother. Oh, I'm sorry. Jassim's brother was wounded by broken glass. He said he saw no warnings. He saw no warnings. They were, of course, I was wrong what I said earlier. They were in a hurry to get to the hospital because her husband, the father of her child, was waiting for them. I was driving my car at full speed because I did not see any sign or warning from the Americans. It was not until they shot the two bullets that killed my sister and cousin that I stopped. Quote, another quote. "This is why we cannot win the war. This is why we will never win this war. This is why we lost this war from the moment the first shot was fired." This is Jassim's brother. Quote, "God take revenge on the Americans and those who brought them here. They have no regard for our lives." Oh, by the way, for the family values Republicans out there, doctors tried but failed to save the baby. The military spokesman said, "The loss of life is regrettable and coalition forces go to great lengths to prevent them." No, they don't. The women's bodies were wrapped in sheets and lying on stretchers outside the Samarra General Hospital before being taken to the morgue, while residents pointed to bullet holes on the windshield of a car and a pool of blood on the seat. Oh, well, so much for shooting to disable the vehicle. That'll disable the vehicle, all right. Ah, maybe she didn't die from the gunshot wounds. Maybe she died from the wreck. You can scream stop to the top of your lungs, but if a woman in labor is screaming in your vehicle, odds are, I don't care how loud it is, you're not going to hear it. Fact of the matter is, they didn't hear the gunfire. Khalid Nassif Jassim, the brother, also noted that the American forces had blocked off the side road only 2 weeks ago, and that there had been no news about the observation post that they allegedly ran past. You know, we've got a law, and lots of states do. We got us a law in West Virginia now that says if you commit a crime against a pregnant woman and it injures the fetus as well, that it's a double crime. And you know who pushed for that damned law? Bunch of godforsaken, soulless, motherless Republicans. The same ones that started this damned war. But you see, she wasn't a pregnant woman. She was a pregnant female. We're sorry about the loss of life to the pregnant female. We're sorry about the loss of life to the pregnancy. Somebody needs to send Khalid Jassim's words to George Bush so that he can understand that he has lost the hearts and minds of the Iraqis, if he ever had them for a millisecond. God take revenge on the Americans and those who brought them here. They have no regard for our lives. George Bush said that he learned about the Haditha slaughter from news reports. Didn't even learn it from his own chain of command. No, there's a reason for that. That one, no, for once he had to turn off the filter and admit he learned it, that he does pay attention to the media from time to time, because if it came through his chain of command, somebody might ask him, well, George, have you ordered that the murderers be punished? They're regrettable. Man, you're going to have some collateral damage. And sometimes the collateral is a nearly born Iraqi baby. We're so screwed. And the sad thing is, I'm screwed, and you're screwed. Liberals are screwed. Because Khalid didn't say the conservative Americans don't care about our lives. He said Americans in general. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the gall, the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a, you know, a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Roadside bombs happen in Iraq. Roadside bombs happen in Iraq because of people like, Nabiha Nassif Jassim and her 57-year-old cousin, Saliha Mohammed Hassan. Because the Iraqis don't have an army. They don't have an air force. They don't have a navy. They have a population, 50% or more of which is under the age of 30. And this is, you know, there are dozens and dozens of stories about how, well, the soldiers said they told them to stop and they fired to disable the vehicle, and, well, damn, they killed them. War is hell. Next. And if you think I'm being hard on the soldiers, I'm not. I so loathe the miserable, old, bloodless, soulless, cretin monsters who put them in this position. I do. Who among us would want to be that soldier who just realized that he partial birth abortioned a 35-year-old Iraqi woman whose driver didn't speak English and couldn't comprehend the word stop in the middle of the screaming of the labor pains inside the car. Who wants that soldier? Who wants to be that soldier? Who wants to live with that nightmare? Who wants to wake up in the middle of the night with a cold sweat, seeing the body like the first time right after you fired the shots? Who wants to be that person? Who wants to be that person's mother or father or God knows wife or child? None of us do, and none of us would wish it on our worst enemies. And a group of people who claim to love this country casually, heartlessly, put young men and women in the position where they wind up in that shape and they wind up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a cold sweat. And the booze won't help you sleep, and the pills won't help you sleep. And the nightmares don't stop. Kids from Eastaboga, Alabama, and Left Hand, West Virginia. Kids who, when they left, were the pride of their communities and will come home shattered. And a Veterans Administration that will bust its ass to keep from having to give them support once their usefulness has been ended. Kids who have no idea who the enemy is. Kids who've gotten to the point where everybody is the enemy because everybody may have a bomb or a gun. And at 100 yards, you can't tell what their intent is in that speeding vehicle. You don't know. You don't know that there's a woman in labor in it. All you know is the one thing in the world you have to do is follow orders. So you put a couple of rounds into the windshield. It's a hell of a speeding ticket, isn't it? And then you go up and you inspect the damage. And the damage just happens to be a 35-year-old woman with the fetus crowning. How lightly we take war. How profoundly we injure ourselves in so doing. And that's it for tonight. The show was produced magnificently by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Our IT is managed by Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers of Tallahassee, Florida. The show comes to you every night by virtue of the hard work of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting this network, they are trying to save the American dream. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org manages the stream of this and all the other horn programs. He also archives many other fine liberal talk programs. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.